One sat alone beside the highway begging. His eyes were blind, the light he could not see. He clutched his old rags and shivered in the shadows. Then Jesus came and bade his darkness flee. When Jesus comes.
It's time again for the Family Altar program with Evangelist Lester Roloff.
When Jesus comes, all the tears are dried away.
And here now is Brother Roloff.
And fills the life with glory. For all is changed when Jesus comes to stay.
And now then, we've got one of the outstanding entertainers of the world trying to warn you tonight and preach to you tonight. Our kids, in the meantime, have been caught up by all of these forces on them. They've become lost with marijuana, barbiturates, amphetamines with STP and DMT with speed, which they inject in with heroin. Today, he thinks the drug scene is changing. I wish I could believe that. I wish I could believe that. He thinks maybe that things are improving. But you know, he says the doctors have no idea what to do with him except to keep them sedated. That's sad, isn't it? The thing that and he never has gone to the roots of this thing. He never has come to the remedy. The doctors have no idea what to do with him except to keep them sedated. They're catatonic. In many cases, unable to talk, unable to think, unable to express themselves. In some cases, from one dose of LSD, dropped into a party glass as a prank by somebody who felt the same way you and I did when we were growing up. And we went to a party and somebody put a half pint of gin in the punch. Now the funny thing is to drop LSD in the punch. And these kids are suffering sometimes unconsolable tragedies in their lives. I read on. Well, what's happened? Now they're trying to stop using LSD in some cases, but heroin is on the increase. Cocaine, one of the most pleasurable and most deadly of all drugs, is on the increase. Marijuana is excused everywhere. It's nothing. And that's one of the hardest things to talk about. The increased use of barbiturates and amphetamines is apparent everywhere because there are millions of them. You can get them any place. Doctors prescribe them. One woman wrote me the other day, "What am I going to do about my daughter? I'm afraid she's using too many amphetamines because I noticed that mine are missing." I believe if I was her, instead of writing him, I'd go get rid of mine. Now then, across the country we hear the cry, why not legalize marijuana? Since so many people are using it, it's just the present generation's alcohol. To that I say, never! Marijuana is still an unknown, dangerous drug. I want to tell you a few things about marijuana because it's the hardest thing to argue against. I know it will come up again and again in your classrooms. Let me tell you something about marijuana. To begin with, unfortunately, since 1930, the Narcotics Bureau and other well-meaning people have advertised marijuana as a narcotic and as addictive. It is neither a narcotic nor is it addictive. The kids found this out. They dismissed all things said about marijuana. And like kids do, they ran in exactly the opposite direction and said it's harmless. Well, it is not a narcotic because it does not ease pain or put you to sleep, nor does it build tolerance, but it is a drug. It does something that is very peculiar to marijuana that is not peculiar to any other drug almost that is on the market. It has a reverse tolerance. It is cumulative. Marijuana stays in the body for as long as weeks and sometimes months. A head who smokes marijuana every other day or every day is building up a bank. And he uses a word there that I'm going to spell because I don't think anybody on earth could pronounce it. He said it's a bank of TETRAHYDROCANNABINOL. And other hallucinogenic agents in his body so that he needs less and less to get higher and higher. Just the opposite of heroin, where you need more and more to get the same pleasant rush. Marijuana is a drug that you can become dependent on, not hooked, but dependent is the word. We know that marijuana has properties which make it dangerous. If for no other reason than to drive an automobile, it does three things. First, when you're high on marijuana, you're unable to see distances as it relates to reality, or time and speed as it relates to reality. These two elements are distorted by marijuana. Third, the use of marijuana makes the glare of approaching headlights much worse than they would be to a normal eye. The person under the influence of marijuana is blinded by headlights much more than the normal person. And so we have our kids out driving cars, muscularly coordinated, even though they're high. If they were as high on alcohol as they're on marijuana, they could hardly get into the car. Unfortunately, marijuana leaves them able to move and coordinate their muscles, but not their mind. There are a lot of things we don't know about marijuana, yet but some fascinating experiences are being conducted. A doctor friend of mine is blowing marijuana into the little experimental cubicles where he breeds spiders of different kinds. After the spiders have breathed the marijuana for a little while, they make their spider webs, but no longer with the exquisite pattern and symmetry of nature. This is going to get something over to you if you listen. These spiders, which by instinct and heredity make certain kinds of webs, no matter where they are or what they do, now make webs that go in all directions. They've lost all their symmetry and all their patterns. Marijuana has done that to them. Have you seen anything comparable to that in the young people? The sloppy, lazy, no purpose in life, no desire to work. Supposing you were to legalize marijuana, what brand are you going to legalize? And if marijuana is so harmless, why not legalize hashish, H-A-S-H-I-S-H? And he goes to mention some of the things. I'm going to close the reading of this by giving two other statements. When I talk in high schools and the kid puts his hand up back in the second row, there's always some kid with the beads and stuff, and he says, "What do you know about marijuana? Have you ever used it?" I say, "No, I've never used it." He says, "Well, how can you tell anything about it?" I say, "You young idiot, did you know that the world's greatest obstetricians have never been pregnant?" You don't have to use something to know something. And that's what you kids are getting yourselves into. You'd say, "We've got to taste it. We've got to experiment with it. We're just going to smoke it one time. We're just going to..." And that's exactly where you wind up. You haven't got good sense. And you know what so many young people have told me, boys and girls? They said, "Well, if you don't, you're a chicken." Well, I'd rather be a healthy chicken than a dead idiot, hadn't you? He raises the question, do women who go to the grocery store have to be a hen to tell a bad egg? Then the next one that comes from this high school or college kid, he says, "Marijuana is our booze. How about you on Saturday night? I bet you belt down some, don't you?" I appreciate this answer. "Thank God I don't smoke and don't drink, and I can honestly say to them, I do not drink." I do not drink, and I wouldn't have the guts to stand up in front of my audiences from coast to coast of young people and tell them not to take one drug when I'm taking another one. Amen. And that includes your cigarettes, too. I just out loud with it tonight. Anybody hooked on cigarettes, a drug addict. So I don't, and I never will. I know that most people who drink to be sociable, he said. I wish he'd hit this a little harder. They do not drink to get drunk. Most people go to cocktail parties and they have a drink. They don't intend to fall over drunk, but almost nobody smokes marijuana because it tastes good or because it's sociable. This other statement, and I'm through. We know, incidentally, that alcohol is the worst drug in point. Alcohol is about even, in fact, in point of monetary and family tragedy, but that's something that's here and there's no reason in having another one. Just because we're stuck with cancer, why should we okay tuberculosis or leprosy. That's what I say to the kids. But I've digressed here a little, he said. But that's something for you to think about. Now then, back to the text. Young people, it's not just Brother Olaf. It's the fact that our whole nation has been plunged into sin. Now, what's the remedy? I'd like to have written the last paragraph of that. I'd have been glad, because he didn't offer the remedy, did he? He sure did lay it out as bad. And he seemed to indicate that he was a Christian. But, oh, I tell you, let me finish his message for you. Number one, if you get saved at a young age, God will save you from a life of dope. You'll never have to taste it at all. If you're satisfied with Jesus, why are you looking for something else to satisfy you?
But that's not the case with a lot of girls and a lot of boys. You'd say, Brother Olaf, you came to me a little later. I came to you a little late. I've already experienced it.
Now then, what is the remedy? Just what we've been presenting, and that is Jesus Christ. Girls, you've got to be saved. When you get saved, then Jesus destroyed the works of the devil. And I've mentioned two works of the devil tonight, and Jesus Christ came to destroy those works, and he came to destroy. Now, there are other sins, and this is sad, but this is what lying goes with drug addiction. Nearly every alcoholic I've ever met in my life is a liar. He has to. I mean, when he gets hooked on the stuff, he has to lie to his wife, he lies to his boss, he lies to the preacher, and then he begins to lie to himself. He said, I'm really not an alcoholic. I mean, I'm not a drunkard. I take it or leave it. I mean, and he turns out to be a liar. A drug addict does the same thing. They begin to lie. Oh, they live a lie. And they don't have any peace, or they don't have any joy. And they're hooked, and hopelessly so. And they become afraid. And many of them commit suicide because of the mental disturbances. And you see, as I see this drug addiction problem, now what's happened to them? They've turned out to be rebels. They're thinking wrong. They don't want mother and dad to have anything to do with them. They've turned against God. They've turned against the Bible. They've turned against prayer. They don't memorize. Their mind won't click. They're hooked on rock and roll. And the rock and roll, of course, is one of the tremendous poisons of the mind that has gripped him. And he said the same thing. Preachers are waking up, some of them. Others are gone to sleep a little sounder and welcome the stuff into there. I have a clipping in my Bible where I used to be, and I'm thinking of a First Baptist church in one place, and I'm thinking of a Mennonite church in another place that have just welcomed a tremendous rock and roll festival into their church. And dear friends, you notice what he said? When the old spider began to smell and to sniff marijuana, of course he had more sense than to smoke it. They had to put it on him. I guess the poor thing couldn't get away. But when he went back to work, and girls, I want you to see this, and this is a practical application. When the old spider went back up the wall and said, well, I guess I better get on with my web. And he said, it don't make any difference to me how it looks. And he just flitted across. I imagine his neighbor said, reckon what's happened to old Bill? Well, I tell you, he certainly, I mean, he must have lost his blueprint. I've never seen him build a house like that, no. He never had been on marijuana before. You reckon that has anything to do with some of you girls that want to be so slouchy? You don't want to make up your bed, and you don't want to keep your room clean, and you wouldn't help your mother wash dishes, and you didn't want to keep the house, and you didn't want to vacuum the carpet, and you didn't want to look neat and nice, and you didn't keep your person as beautiful as you used to, and you wanted to look like the hippie world, and that's the way the college students are looking today. You reckon that's part of it? I believe so. You remember the little girl that came and walked down that side? She had her hippie or yippie hair. I mean, her slacks and slouchy, and yet she's a beautiful girl. She came in with a lovely mother that's educated and refined and cultured. She came in and she looked up and saw this right here. She said, I don't dig that. She looked around and saw the arrangements of the organ and the piano. And she said, I don't dig that either. And she said, just to tell you the truth, I don't dig God. And I don't dig Jesus, and I don't dig the Bible, and I'm not going to stay here. I saw that little girl, and she's walking with the Lord. She goes out to witness every week and tell the sweet story. And she said, I'm not planning to go home. I'm staying in the home of a preacher because I've learned to love the Lord so good. A very difficult girl. Drugs, dope, living with a pusher, all the rest of it. And yet Jesus came in. That's the answer. And I could wish, if I were to ever be on nationwide television or radio, I'd just like to tell the people, not only is the problem serious, but the remedy is sure. Jesus Christ came into this world to destroy the works of the devil. And when you let him into your heart, the Bible said, if any man be in Christ, he's a new creature. All things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. I've been with the boys. I want to tell a story again tonight that I think illustrates and would challenge your faith. This to me is one of the most potent testimonies that's ever been given. I went and got a warden, and he's got some reputation in the penitentiary. He's been there more than a quarter of a century, many more years than that. I heard the chaplain one time and got acquainted with him, and he wanted to come fishing. I said, I'll come get you, because I wanted to get into death row, and I wanted to get into the pen. So I called up the chaplain, and I said, how about coming fishing with me? He said, yes. I said, could you get Captain to come, and maybe some of the other officers? He said, yeah, I think I can. He called me. He said, we'll be ready at a certain time. You land on the strip right here. I said, I'll be there. And so I set that 180 down, and they came and met me, and the old captain got in. We came down, and I think had a big fish dinner and flew down the intercoastal, and that night we had service. And I said, when the service is over, Captain, you got anything to tell these boys? And these boys, you know, they's I and Captain, knowing where he's from and how close they were to going there. He said, I believe I do. So he got up and he said, you know, they had an old boy to come to prison. Said he killed three men. Said the judge said, we're going to put you in an electric chair. And so they's about ready to electrocute him, and the governor had mercy on him and put him in for life. Said he brought him in, said he's mean and mad at the world. And said he looked the situation over and killed four more while he's in prison. That's seven. Said they put him in solitary. You know what that is? That's a little bitty cell when you just sort of shoot him in there and that's it. No sunshine, no fresh air. I mean, he's just back in the dark. This is unbelievable. But God had some things in mind. Surely he did. He stayed in there 14 years in solitary. Captain Mack said we thought he'd die every year. Said he was supposed to die. But said we couldn't turn him out because he killed four men. Everybody's scared of him. And he said, you know, this is sweet, girls. Tune in now. He said one day, he said somebody came along and just pushed the Bible in there to him. Said sort of dark, but said the old boy, and he said, now, I've always figured that when somebody got a Bible, it's trying to work their way out of prison with it. But he said he began to read it and read it and read it, and said the parole board representatives, they'd go by to see him. And he just looked like he'd changed completely. Looked like the bitterness was gone. The hatred for the world was gone. And the old boy was all cheered up when he came and said that they got to where they never did fail to go by because they just wanted to see what he'd say next. And said they'd just go by and visit with him, and he'd just talk with him, you know, and he was so cordial and so nice. And they came to me one day and said, Captain, would you be willing to take that old boy on the farm with you? We'd like to get him out of solitary. We've been talking to him, looking at him, watching him. Man, he's been in there all this time, looked like he'd never going to die. And said instead he's getting better. and said, would you take him out and put him on the farm and let him work with your crew?
Captain, I can see him now. He said, well, he said, I'd have to study about that. He said, he
went to talk to him. He went to the folks in the prison. He said, I'm willing to take him. And said when he got out, he was so weak, he could hardly walk. Said he was as white as a sheet. Said his eyes were not properly dilated to the sun. Said he had a hard time. And he said, I kind of felt sorry for him and I told my men, I said, now, boys, don't let him do anything. If he can keep up, he can just walk along like a little old dog. That's what we're going to let him do. Nobody, he can't work. And don't anybody give him anything to pick up or carry. And he said, you know, he came walking along, just skin and bones. But he said, my men said they spent a good deal of time watching him. But he said it wasn't very long until he began to worm his way in. He got a little stronger and he said, let me pick that up. Let me do this. And what do you want me to do, Captain? I'm ready. I mean, I'm feeling better. And said he just got to where he was and said everybody in my organization there said they thought a lot of him. Said, listen. And then directly, Captain got a request. Said, I need one of your men to work in the kitchen. And he went to this boy and he thought, well, this is a good chance. He's grown and gotten healthy and strong and doing so good. And he said, how about it? Would you like to get out of the field and go to the kitchen? Well, he said, no, I'm afraid not. He said, you see, I teach a Bible class on Sunday morning and have a prayer meeting on Wednesday night, and they allowed to tie me up in that kitchen. I couldn't make it. Captain looked at him and said, I'll see to it that you get to go. I'll see to it that you get to go to that class. You go into the kitchen, go to work. And he did. And you know, the parole board watched him, and of course he was longing for a parole out of prison, and they gave him a put-off and a put-off and a put-off. And finally, and every time he'd get a put-off, he just kept working around. And so one day, they came to Captain and said, now, Captain, we're going to answer, because he's come up again. His case has been reviewed. And we're going to give him another put-off, but I want you to watch him, and I want you to be there, and I want you to hand him the letter. And then I want you to see what his reaction is and what his attitude is when you give him that letter. Captain said, I'll do it. So he got the letter, and Captain called him and said, okay, and here's the answer. Said, I wonder what it says. Said, come and read it. So he opened it up right quick. We're going to give you another put-off. I don't believe you're ready to be released and go back to society and to a free world. And the old boy finished reading it, folded, put his pocket, smiled, said, well, looks like the Lord got some more work for me right here. Captain said, I got in touch with the parole board, and the parole board said, I believe he's ready. And Captain said, you know where he is? Preaching to the Indians, telling this sweet story of Christ. And then he closed by saying, I believe he was a changed man. Amen? That's what Jesus does.
We're happy you joined us today for the Family Altar program with Evangelist Lester Roloff. Our message today is Two Works of the Devil. Now, to receive the message on a CD, ask for offer number RO2485 and include $10 to help with shipping and handling. We'd like to have today's date when you write and the call letters to this radio station. The address is the Roloff Evangelistic Enterprises, Post Office Box 1177, Corpus Christi, Texas 78403. And if you'd like to use your credit card, dial toll-free 1-800-772-7507. During the month of July, we recommend this offer, No Thieves in Heaven, a message by Brother Roloff teaching the difference between a thief and a shepherd from the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. You will learn who is the thief and how he operates. When requesting this CD, ask for offer number RO2748 and include $10. We would also accept credit cards by dialing 1-800-772-7507.
7507, or you can write us at the Roloff Evangelistic Enterprises, Post Office Box 1177, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78403. Now, the offer again is No Thieves in Heaven, offer number 2748. This is Gene Price, speaking for the staff here today, wishing you a wonderful day, and we're looking forward to being with you again here on the Family Altar Program.
The strangers to God, His grace and His love, were gathered by blue Galilee to listen with joy to words from the lips of the stranger who sat by the sea. They came and they were blessed. He gave the weary rest. He made the blinded eyes to see. He fed the hungry soul and He made the wounded whole by the waters of blue Galilee. They sat at His feet and they looked in His face, content in His presence to be, for no one before had cared for their souls like the stranger who sat by the sea. They came and they were blessed. He gave the weary rest. He made the blinded eyes to see. He fed the hungry soul and He made the wounded whole by the waters of blue Galilee.